Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Obviously, Les, a lot has happened since the last time we got together. We made our predictions for the big shows that both AEW and WWE put on that ran this past weekend. There's lots of fallout from those things and obviously the week's TV as well. But since we spent so much of the show making our predictions, I thought this time, unlike the last time where I didn't have the exact tally in front of me, I've got the scores here. From the,
before he says another word, those of you listening, he won. That's why he's got the top of the score. If I'd won by just one point, he would be. Oh, I didn't tally those up. I forget. What did we?
We would have just gone straight to Wednesday. That's all.
Are you running for an office or anything in Jersey?
No, too many skeletons in the closet. I can't do that.
Well, then you make a great politician. Well,
yeah, now that you mention
that's
it.
That's what they're going for today, right? Yeah, skeletons in the closet.
That's true. It's not like
the more the merrier.
That is a fair point. There might be some Sosa for Governor signs on your lawn sooner rather than later.
Hey, before we get into that, I want to make a public apology to the listeners and cover something real quick. I'm not going to belabor this, spend a lot of time on it. My cut and paste guy sent me a couple clips from the board this week, and I erred by omission when I was talking about the Ace Steel and Omega thing. I neglected to carry and finish and say that the bite marks were on his forearm up near the elbow. And that is on me. I knew that, and I didn't bring it up. But I wanted to mention it because one of these guys said I was acting like an old fanboy. And man, that hurt.
I bet you lost a lot of sleep buying that.
I did. I haven't slept at night. Now, I will say this. All this, and actually I should have mentioned it because that just solidifies my story, is why that Omega got bit, because that arm was sliding across Ace's face. That's how his teeth got in that forearm. But again, you can say it's because I'm old, but I'm not an old fanboy. I am old, but I neglected to bring that up, and I apologize. And I don't have a problem, and you call me out on something, I'm good. So, but old fanboy, can we get past that, you think?
I don't know. Why are we? Well, obviously, you're addressing a comment from the board, but I this whole thing about this fight and all this, I want to put this to bed. Y'all can feel how you feel about it. Les can feel how he feels about it. I can feel how I feel about it. Call me a barbarian if you want. But, Ace, really, the idea that this was a fist fight. And with no rules, obviously, so whoever bites, bites. Are we just mad that Kenny didn't chomp first? I don't understand. But
I don't either. I don't either.
I mean, the man is in a locker room with his wife in a leg cast and his buddy with a torn triceps. I mean, all bets are off. Should we not consider ourselves lucky that nobody went Haku on somebody and put their finger in his eye and yanked it out?
Exactly.
It's a street fight. Come on. How is it?
Yes.
I guess really what it all goes back to is that Ace shouldn't be back because he bit somebody. To which I say, so what? Why is Ace the only guy who got fired in the first place is my question.
Yes, very good. But I just wanted to clear that up and say that a number of years ago when I wasn't quite as mellow as I am in my old age, I might have brought your mother to task. I'd call me an old fanboy, but I'm not going to do that today. But anyway, I apologize. I forgot to mention the forearm and where the teeth marks were, and I'm sorry.
Again, feel how you wish to feel about it, whether or not somebody should or shouldn't be employed. The bottom line is all's well now, less that ends well. Everybody's drawing a check. Hopefully we're all making money and doing business together. AEW essentially gets a new show out of the deal and another revenue stream. And if they can make that work, there's tens of millions of dollars, potentially all because Punk said, come see me. And they came and saw him. So in the end, this may not end up being bad for business in the least for anybody involved.
No, you're right. And Neil, yeah, exactly. No, you're 100% right. The only other thing that the fanboy that wrote this made a mistake is I mentioned I heard about all this from a innocent bystander. In other words, I didn't hear it from, and they said, why didn't he talk to Ace? I'm trying to give you an opinion of someone who saw it or saw parts of it and wasn't involved. That's why I brought that up. Anyway, he didn't talk to Ace, so he how did no. Fuck it. Let's want to do the show. I want to get being called an old fanboy. Come on.
Besides, you haven't paid for a ticket to see a show in how long? Nobody could call you a fan.
No. And some, I would think, if I had paid tickets to see, I'd ask for a refund.
There are a lot of shows that I get to see for free that I wish I could get some at least time back for.
Yeah, me too.
God,
me too.
Almighty.
All right.
Well, the official tally on the pay-per-view predictions this past weekend, because I was, in fact, victorious, Mr. Thatcher. You are correct. I want to make sure I make good mention of that here. As far as the AEW show is concerned, it was actually six up and three down for me, five up, four down for you. The difference, I got to go back and actually look at the list here, but I'm pretty sure the difference was the main event, the Elite and the Blackpool Combat Club. Yeah, that was the difference on that one. Other than that, we had the same winners. I was undefeated in Saudi Arabia, and you took one loss because you held on to the phenomenal AJ Styles.
I did. Yes, I did. Yes. And by the way, while we're on that, Saudi show was a hell of a show.
It was very, by the way, you know, for all the things that happened over the course of the week, that's really where we should start when we get serious here about professional wrestling and the events of the week. And not necessarily the entire show or anything, because obviously you've heard about that at this point, backwards and forwards. But less specifically, your thoughts on what went down with the Bloodline to close that show. I mean, it looks like this thing has imploded, but there's Roman Reigns, as we record this early on Friday morning, 1,000-day celebration for his run as champion that's going to air on SmackDown Friday evening. And who knows whether or not the Usos will be back in the fold by the time that show is up and or what the situation is. But it certainly looks as though this thing has come crashing down.
Yeah. You know what? I don't think it's going to come crashing. I don't know what. You know, I want to see it. Yes, the old fanboy who's got 63 years in the business.
Well, to be fair,
to see it because
I would pay to see what happens here tonight.
Yes, absolutely. And the other, you know, here's the thing. I want to congratulate Michael Hayes, P.S. Hayes, on being behind the scenes in that main event because of the way they set up the finish and the, you know, motions up, down, up. Man, it was pretty, I thought. I liked it. And they let again. We're all going to be interested in tonight. If you watch that, you got to be interested in tonight. But I thought that, it was some listener is going to probably call me out on this. But it was an old school finish in that main event, plain and simple.
Talk about it.
They took you one direction and brought you back in the other direction. Over how many times? There's no. And that's to me, having been a worker, that was the fun of being in there, man, is when you bring them people to that big, and all of a sudden you take that cheering away from them and then that heel starts to work and back and forth. That's the beauty of it, man. That's what I miss. But that main event was sweet. And like I say, I thought the whole show, went really now. Belair and Asuka's match died in the middle. It was not strong. I don't know why, but it was flat there for a while. And I don't know if that had to do with one or the other or just, chemistry wasn't there. I don't know. But I thought the rest of the show was pretty solid, didn't you?
I very much enjoyed the show. Yeah, I thought everything on the show was really good. Correct me if I'm wrong, because my memory is not what it used to be, Les. But did you not float the possibility of Cody passing out as a potential win here for Brock last week?
Yeah.
I thought you did.
Yep, I did. It's been a pass-out week, if you stop and think about it, right? Jericho passed out.
Yeah, he did. That's true.
You think they got a booker that's floating back and forth between the two companies?
Brian Danielson is the
double
mole.
Agent, as it were.
Yeah, Danielson.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But yeah, I am so Statlander as the champion. I'm 100% for that. Again, I think Jade looks great, but she's far away from being ready to defend a championship of any kind in this business. And I don't mean to be jumping back and forth, but in watching Statlander's first defense against Nyla Rose Wednesday night, yes, they made the right choice. I hope she hangs on to that belt. And her heartfelt promo about being the champion was different from the standard, I'm the best, best champion of all time, and all that sort of stuff. And she was very humble. She teared up. And now, whether that was a work or shoot, I don't even care, but it was the right time and the right place for it. And I hope she keeps that belt for quite a while, because I think she's going to make it a lot more important than it has been in the last year or so.
So the question you asked me, though, about Orange Cassidy, or as you have dubbed him, Orange Goldberg, does he now have 40 successful defenses since he did beat 20 guys in one night in that battle royal?
Wow. Yeah.
I don't get it. I continue to not understand it. And it's okay if, you know, and I'm not talking about him as champion. That's a whole nother conversation. What I'm saying again is, after 20 something successful defenses, to then have this free for all only for him to just walk out with the belt again. That got past me.
Me as well. And I think, in fact, if they wanted to protect him, that would have been the place to take the damn belt off of him.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, it was him against 19 other people, or right. or 20 other people, right? And so, you know, he didn't have eyes in the back of his head, and then whatever. But yeah, I don't get it. You know, are you an old fanboy too?
Probably, but I mean. Yeah, I got a birthday coming up. I definitely feel like that, yes.
Or a middle-aged fanboy. I can't tag you as old as me, for Christ's sake. I could, but you're not. Anyway, yeah, I thought the Nyla Rose thing was good. I thought Jericho, passing out to get Adam the win, I thought that was good. And then for them, I thought it was a little early to come back with a mixed tag. I thought, you know, that by passing out on the pay-per-view that Jericho might have taken a week out of the picture. But then, like I told you before we started recording, I thought Wednesday night, the damn mixed tag was the best match on the show.
That's true.
It was actually a wrestling match. There were a couple of choreographed exhibitions, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to talk about the main event at the AEW pay-per-view with the Combat Club versus the Elite. The one and only issue I really have with Takeshita, obviously tipping the scales in favor of the Combat Club and apparently aligning himself with Don Callis. I can't say it's never been brought up on television. That would not be true. But if you really, they actually have given depth to that whole thing, except you'd have to be watching the internet to see it. Callis has actually been chasing Takeshita around for months, trying to get him on board with anything Callis was involved in forever now. But you would have to be someone who is watching every single thing AEW puts out to really understand why that was, why he was the choice there in that particular match, the way that ended, how it did, and for it to have the sort of gravity that it would have had if all of those things with Callis and Takeshita had been on television for 6 months.
Right. But they weren't. They were. And there is another reason. If you basically got your roster, you spread them so thin and put them, anything like, well, here's the thing to cut, you know, so I don't get into some lengthy thing. If this is what they knew they were going to do on a major TV show, then all the things that you're talking about that were done on the internet or, you know, off dark or whatever, should have been done in a feature show.
Yeah.
Us all to this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, there was another thing too this weekend that they put on the internet like 2 hours before the show that I watched, and it was so good it made me angry. And what I mean by that is it was so good that I could not understand why it wasn't on television in front of, you know, 800,000 to a million people, which was a sit down with Jim Ross and Don Callis. And if you haven't seen this on YouTube yet, it is worth going out of your way to find. It is absolutely fantastic. And I was just beside myself when it was over. Like, why wasn't this on Dynamite?
Jim Ross at his best, right?
Oh, it's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are the things that should, those things, and we're not just talking about AEW. Now I'm talking about any major television show out there. This is how you get depth to your characters. Not by screaming and throwing things and having major brawls with 10 people. It's by sitting down and calmly laying out the story with facials and emotions and talking about it and establishing in a calm environment the story you're trying to tell. Would you not agree with that?
That is exactly what they did, and it was unbelievably good. Now, obviously, it was, I think it's something around 10 or 12 minutes. So I'm not saying you have to run the entire thing in one segment, although you could. But,
right.
You know, you could have cut it into a couple of minutes here, a couple of minutes there, or even use the highlights. But for it to be in the internet in full, on a couple hours before the show, I just could not. I was like, what is going on here? Like, there's just so much good stuff that you could or should be doing or are doing. And in favor of some more questionable things that are getting the television time instead of stuff like this.
Right, right, yeah. It's not. It was good, but it just was put in the place where it wouldn't do the most good
yes.
for the characters or the show, right?
Exactly. It could have brought a lot more to what we were going to see in that main event.
Yes. And you know what? I'll make a reference here. We talk many times about trying to get 10,000 people over on 1 2-hour show. And I say 10,000, yes, somebody's going to say, he exaggerated. Yes, I did on purpose. But anyway, we talk about that. And so you're lost. It gets so many stories or things get lost in a shuffle. And so here again, instead of putting a 30-man tag or some goofy match that really is not going to help you draw numbers or advance the storylines of anybody, you could put something like this that Jim and Callis did and make it valuable to your show and to advancing the storyline that it talks about.
I would have loved to have seen it. But it is on YouTube, and if you're someone who is deeply invested in that angle or in any of the people involved, you should check it out. It is very good stuff from Jim Ross and Don Callis.
Excellent. I have not seen it. I saw a clip, just a piece of it, but I intend to go back and check out the whole thing.
So you are underwhelmed at new World Heavyweight Champion Seth Rollins' first title defense, Les?
I rather am underwhelmed, yes. I know Miz has been new. Well, let's face it. If you've been in WWE for 2 or 3 weeks, you've held several titles. And, of course, yes, I'm exaggerating. But if you listen, and there's when you hear Dave or Brian or anybody on a podcast talk about the titles being far less meaningful now than ever before, there's part of your reason that everybody is, you know, they're not special. Everybody's got one. It's like an opinion. Everybody's got one or has had one. And yes, I don't see Miz as being, I mean, you and I, we know who's going to get their hand held up, right?
Yes. And you know, if you haven't seen the story, it looks like Miz is the first opponent for Seth on the next loop of house shows. And a lot of times, usually whatever you ends up on the house shows in some shape, form, or fashion will end up on television. So I don't know if this is going to be leading to something that's going to happen on Raw this week or next week. But usually those things are going in a particular direction and they make those matches for a reason. So if we end up having to see some sort of angle in a match between Seth and Miz, expected to draw a number on Raw, I hope they don't hold it against Seth.
I hope not, too. Well, and here's the other thing. Just earlier this week, Ricochet beat Miz in the Money in the Bank, right?
And he gets a title shot.
Yes. Figure that one out.
I just work here.
Let's drug test those people that are writing this. Right? Yeah, but yeah, that, I mean, again, we use the words consistency on this show, and there's one of the things, it's not consistent by anybody's standards. You know, he just got eliminated by Ricochet, so you can't figure he's a number one contender. And anyway, so yeah, it's a head-scratcher. It is a head-scratcher.
Well, you know what? Then let me ask you this, and I probably should pull up the Raw roster in order to go through this in a little more depth. Let's just say this is simply for house shows, and they're not bringing any of this to television. Who exactly would make a good first opponent for Seth Rollins here?
Well, you know, even I just – the reason I'm saying Miz, too, is Miz is more a I hate to say comedy act because he's a little more than that. But he's certainly not Orange Goldberg. But, you know, somebody with a little more stroke, you know, in terms of in the fans' eyes. I'm not calling anybody to write this minute off the top of my head, but somebody who's got a little more credibility in terms that you might consider, well, you know, maybe this guy could slip by Seth. But I can't imagine. And plus, what are your commentators going to say in during that particular match? You know, wow. You know, Miz just coming off a long losing streak, Ricochet, and so and so and so and so. Well, if you stop, think, when was the last time you've seen Miz get his hand raised?
God, that's a good question. I would really have to look that up, honestly.
And the reason I bring this up so often is people get invested in good books, good dramatic movies, and so forth because of more than one thing. And the more substantial story you build around Seth and his first title defense, or Seth and his 50th title defense, whatever it happens to be, the more important it becomes to the people watching it or wanting to watch it. And that's my problem with the inconsistencies.
All right.
That was something that we spent a lot of time back in the day trying to avoid was inconsistencies.
So I'm looking over this Raw roster. McIntyre's injured. You could do Riddle. I mean, he's not been used in a position that would put him in that situation, but it would certainly be a terrific match. Nakamura's involved in the Money in the Bank stuff, so he's out. You could do either of the tag team champions, but they're also kind of busy right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's slim pickings based on injury and availability at this particular point in time. So, you know, all it takes is one angle. I mean, let's just be real. They could have something up their sleeve here that no one's counting on.
Sure.
But yeah.
Or you could have taken one of these guys that you just mentioned and got them a strong win.
Yeah.
Right, on Monday. Or back on the pay-per-view, or whenever. I mean, if you're planning ahead, and we need a somebody for a Seth to do his first title defense against. Well, okay, we're gonna pick wrestler X. All right, well, let's get him a couple strong wins leading up to that, and which gives your commentators something to talk. You know, hey, Joe Blow is you know, had two good strong wins and. Looks like he's got a shot. At, you know, will that carry him past Seth, or what's going to happen? You know, so there could be some question to, you know, he might be, maybe he's on a roll and he might slip by Seth or something. That's my point, you know. And of course, that, you know, to obviously like we keep talking about the Bloodline being such a great storyline, and a lot of this stuff has been built way ahead of time. And to me, that's. To me, I anything that's going to be featured, I want to do that, you know? And so I just think that Seth getting, you know, he's going to, I want him to get a good strong win on his first title defense, but I just think I would like it to be somebody who I might consider might, you know, have a chance to get their hand raised.
Well, then let's do this. Since the house shows can be an indication but aren't always, let's presume, or at least here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cross my fingers that this past week's Raw gave you an indication that the Judgment Day is not going to let this go, and we end up with Balor and Rollins, with Priest and Mysterio and Rhea lurking somewhere. The champ might need a little help.
Well, yeah. You come up with some damn good storylines. You do.
Well, obviously they interrupted AJ and Seth this past week. But here's the thing. It could be like, hey, we need a main event this week. Let's have a tag match. Well, who's available? And it could have been just as simple as that. Or we could be going somewhere with this this Monday on Raw. Finn may note that Seth doesn't have AJ around to help him, and he hasn't exactly made a whole lot of friends in this locker room. And then we're off and running.
Right. Well, I would think, Finn would have been a hell of a lot more important. And you might have considered, maybe they're going to switch it quick, that wouldn't have been my first thought, but I would have looked for a much better match, much more solid match, one that, would give me more teeth to Seth winning his first title defense than it will, I think, by beating The Miz. And a lot of the things that I think I look at because of my background in the business aren't things that when I say that, it's not that you're a mere mortal, right? It's just that because of so deep of involvement, you see things, and it doesn't always have to be something major, right? Just you just want the people to think. And so, yeah, I think what you're saying would work well too. And again, I think Finn has got more creds than Miz does about what kind of match it will be, A, and B, that he might have a chance to win.
And we should point out, one of the reasons that a lot of times those house show lineups can be an indication is that it gives those people a chance to get some ring time in together on house shows before the match ends up on Peacock or on pay-per-view. But, you could be... Go ahead.
No, I say, and of course, during that period of time, they were working almost every night.
True, yes.
So they were, what they were doing was working on the match they were going to put on television. Getting in, let's try this spot tonight. Okay, good. Yeah, that worked well. We'll add that to the TV. And of course, that's the other thing too, is you stay, the more you're in the ring, you stay sharper. You do. And I understand because of the logistics today. I mean, we used to drive a lot of miles, but they were drivable from a territory standpoint. But when you're in L.A. one night, Chicago the next night, and Minneapolis the night after that or something, it's a tough haul. Well, you ask some of the guys when Vince first started to take over the whole country, talk about going out on the road, staying out there for 10 to 15 days. Working every night.
I mean, he cracked some of the biggest and brightest who've ever done it. Jack Briscoe just quit one snowy night at Newark Airport, got on a plane to Tampa, and never came back.
Right.
To this day, the joke is anytime Vince McMahon sees Terry Funk, he asks him how his horse is because he once walked out on Vince talking about, I got a sick horse back at the Double Cross Ranch. I got to check on him. Schedule was too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're talking about some serious people here, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just some kid that I love wrestling. I want to get in it. I mean, these are dedicated, serious performers. So, yeah. So there's a lot of, but again, that's the thing that I see in the modern picture of the entire industry is people. And when I say people, I don't, wrestlers, bookers, promoters, whoever, aren't paying enough attention to the finer points, to the details. Because they're in such a hurry to get that next big pop. And I think it was, I'm trying to think what the Al Snow said one time. Workers go to the ring to get the people invested, involved in, emotionally in their match. The entertainers go out shooting for the next big pop, which isn't sustaining as the emotional thing. So,
the more I look at this roster, the more I've talked myself into this Judgment Day thing, and we don't have to worry about anything with The Miz other than house shows.
Yeah.
I'm hot with predictions right now, so work with me. But
all right, this, you are hot, aren't you?
The next show, Money in the Bank, is in the UK. Obviously, Finn is not British; he's Irish. But they are going across the pond, and there is substantial WWE history, believe it or not, for those who may have short memories, between Balor and Rollins. It was Balor who won the Universal Championship not too long after it was created and had to surrender it, I think, within a night or two because he was injured in a match against Rollins.
Yeah. That there is some history there. That's right. I had forgotten about that. So yeah, absolutely.
He would make a good first opponent.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that is. Damn, you young guys got long memories. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I think Finn would have been far superior and been more. And it was more like, we need to watch this because we know it's going to be good, but could they possibly switch the title, in one shot?
Well, and again, with the Judgment Day, with Priest and Ripley and Mysterio lurking, and Rollins seemingly having no one in his corner when AJ Styles is not around. Not that AJ's right. his buddy, but you understand what I'm saying after watching Raw this
sure.
week. You know, there is an extra seed of doubt you can sow, even though Seth just won this thing, that Balor's not showing up alone and Rollins probably is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of ways it could have gone. I just think Miz is I'd like to see a better match. I mean, not that this is going to be a bad match, but it's not going to be the level of a Finn versus Friggin, or I told Jim when I said one night we need to write down how many times the damn announcers say Seth Friggin Rollins. Like, his mom gave him that; it's his middle name, right?
Oh my goodness!
I'll tell you this: Money in the Bank qualifiers are now. We were talking about before we went on the air. LA Knight against Montez Ford. We know they're high on Ford, but they've been given LA a push. So which one of these guys gets the nod here?
Well,
I would think,
Here's my thing. Now, in Paul Levesque's WWE, I would lean towards LA Knight. But, you know, we've had that conjecture here and there, and it's quieted down, obviously, quite a bit in the last month or so, about Vince making calls about certain things and inserting himself into situations. Vince would take one look at the people adopting LA Knight the way they have and say, Montez Ford.
Yeah, possibly. You're right. Yeah, there's a good chance of that. There's a good chance of that. And like I said to you, before we start recording, Ford, those guys are talented, but they're kind of part of the furniture now. Right, they've been there so long. Hey, there's old Montez, but Knight is fresh. He's getting a push. He's obviously, whether you like him or don't like him, he's obviously getting over for both sides of that fence. And so I would put him over, but who knows? I'm not sure. Vega and Lacey Evans, as you said, Vega. Has had two good matches, really. Two of the better matches I've seen her have. Puerto Rico and then Saudi. But she's Lacey. I don't know. Lacey Evans got a look. I just don't know. She doesn't. It doesn't come across well on promos, and her work is, I don't know, kind of mechanical. Is that a good expression for it, you think?
I think that's fair. I mean, listen, there have been any number of people in the last, I don't know how many years, you can say, really just haven't gotten out of the gate. So much stopping and starting. We fancy this one week. We have a different taste the next week. And obviously, Lacey had a baby not all that long ago. Pregnancy is a whole different deal. But she's been victimized by that a number of times before she even got pregnant with, let's do this with her. No, let's do that with her. And you've got a ready-made thing about the young lady being in the service and the whole nine yards. And we decide to make her a heel first. Then we go with the service thing. Then we hook her up with Ric Flair. I mean, there's just been so many different things.
Well, actually, we went with the Southern Belle thing first, right?
You're right. That's right. We did do the Southern Belle thing first as a heel.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden she became Sergeant Badass, right, in the Marine Corps.
Yes. So, you know, in addition to, I would say that, you know, you talk about her being mechanical and everything not quite flowing. I mean, I'd make the argument that unfortunately for her, everything about her tenure has kind of been very herky-jerky. You know what I mean?
We're doing this.
Oh, no, wait, let's not do that. And, you know, who knows how that affects people mentally when they actually get in the ring, because it's like, you know, when you have been moved around like that, how do you not know, or how do you control, quiet the mind out there in the match on national television, right? Thinking that maybe if this goes well, maybe we can get this, this, and this. But if I'm a split second late on something, or something isn't quite right, or someone just doesn't like the camera shot that was, this thing looks a little worse than it actually was on television. Now, all of a sudden, I'm in the doghouse. And, you know, once people start messing around with you like that in any walk of life, you start thinking a little too much, and that can affect the way she's been wrestling.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It could be a psychological thing with her as well. You're right. Now, I do believe that Zoe Starks is going to get her hand raised. As you ask, who did Natalya kick in the wrong place?
Oh, I mean, I just felt... You know, who knows? You know, she could be over it. It may not mean a thing to her because the checks still come on time and they are cashable. You know, WWE's not going out of business anytime soon. But to send her all the way to Saudi Arabia on her birthday to lose, not to lose, because there's no shame in losing to Rhea Ripley, but to do what they did the way they did it with her, there's, I mean, a laundry list of people you could have done that with as opposed to Natalya, and I thought she deserved better.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, she's one of the better... mechanical work. I don't mean she was worked. It looks like she's a machine, but she is technically as smooth as any woman in that company. And you're right. I couldn't figure that out. But I think Starks, since they inserted her in the pay-per-view in the title match, I thought, okay, they're planning on pushing her. And honestly, I think she was, again, technically the best worker of the females that were down in NXT that, you know, that they brought up.
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, we have not spent a whole lot of time in recent months talking about NXT, but when we were spending a lot more time on it, she is someone you identified early as somebody who was going places.
Yeah, yeah. And now on Raw, Becky Lynch, she gets over Sonya Deville, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. Like, no doubt about that.
You know, yeah. So, and you know what? I think people like Sonya, who works hard, who, you know, has a decent look. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Sonya. You know, I understand there are people that do jobs. Been people like that all my life. But sometimes... To make that them valuable doing jobs, you need to get their hand raised occasionally. And I think that's something that in some of these lesser matches on television, just if you're saying, oh, we need to fill 6 minutes, what are we going to fill it with? Well, let's fill it with Sonya Deville beating someone who has some talent, but get her a win, right?
Okay, I'm not saying this is good, but I'm saying you've talked me into this. And then everyone will be screaming that Vince is running the show again. But what if Zoe and Trish interfere in that match and Sonya wins for the purpose of bringing Becky and Trish back for Money in the Bank as a single?
Yeah, you could do that. Sure. Sure. Yes, absolutely you could. Vince, you can do anything you want. But yeah. Now, you know, that's it. But you get my point, right? I mean, all the guys that did jobs actually got their hand raised occasionally, right? And especially with this company, everybody's a superstar by name, if not by action. And so, you know, you look at everybody as you... But I don't know about you, but when you call so-and-so a superstar, I think, really? No, come on. I mean, that doesn't mean you don't think they're talented. It's just they're not a superstar. But, I think that you're underneath people or preliminary people, whatever the hell, acknowledge, you know, you want to acknowledge them as. need to get the hands, if it's just against one another at some point. You know, in other words, if you're just filling 5 minutes on a TV, take two people that can go, put them out there, let them work their asses off, and get one of them's hands raised. And then that person is a little more important to if you need to beat them in a couple weeks or next week or whatever. That's just good common, good business, I think. Anyway, where do you think all this is going?
In terms of money in the bank and who's going to end up with briefcases? Gosh. Well, you know, honestly, and this is just me thinking out loud, I like L.A. Knight. I mean, that would be the kind of rocket that would really be, that would make a difference for him. And even though he was doing the whole male model thing at this time last year and all of that, he is not someone, at least to my mind, that has been completely tainted, dragged down, looked at as a talented guy who's not going to get anywhere in this company because he's just been involved and stuck in the mud for too long. So I like, to me, the briefcase is something that could help make a guy like him in this company for the next couple of years if you do it right.
Yeah. And his personality is such, and his work is such, that even if you're getting somebody else's hand raised, he still comes out looking pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Sean's a hell of a talker. L.A. Knight, excuse me, calling him by his given name. But yeah, he's a hell of on the mic. So yeah, I wouldn't be sorry to see that happening. And he's a good guy. He really is. He really is. I don't know with women. I don't know. I don't think they would push Starks at that point. But you talk about a surprise, that would sure be one, would.
Well, it would be a great, you know what, this is something we don't talk about a lot here, but bringing up Zoe Stark as a potential winner of this briefcase here gives me the opportunity to ask you about this. What does that do for not just the morale, but the way in which everybody in Orlando goes about their business? If they see Zoe Stark show up and end up with the briefcase within 6-8 weeks. Now, that doesn't mean everybody will expect the same thing to happen to them when they get the call. But when they see someone walk in and have that kind of success and treated with that kind of respect immediately, that's got to do wonders for everybody in Orlando's confidence too, doesn't it?
It should, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Or you can, you know, it could go either way. You know, it's like when Ohio Valley and me, when we both had developmental, right? I've had some of my kids come to me and say, they talk back and forth, right? These guys are all, you know, and we did our TV and OVW. So, you know, they got a chance to mingle and everything. But one of my guys come in and say, so-and-so got two dark matches in the last month. I haven't been up yet. Well, you know, my answer is that's not my call. You get a favorable report from me, but I'm not the guy that pulls the trigger and says, let's send so-and-so to the next Raw or the next SmackDown, right? So when you see somebody, well, I can tell you right now, Nick Densmore in OVW, there's a guy who is Eugene, they brought him up, but Nick didn't need Eugene. Nick was hell of a worker. He and Rob Conway were partners there, and they were both in the same, virtually the same kind of shape for a long time. And if you saw them individually, not together, you maybe mistake one for the other. But my point is, he was as good or better than Doug Basham, than Rob Conway, than anybody else that came up out of OVW ahead of him. And yet, he was the last of Rob and Basham and a couple other guys, and Nick, were like Danny Davis's nucleus when he first started OVW, and they came out, they were all talented workers, but yet, and Nick took it well, and I know there were people that said to him, man, you know, you're not getting a shot, and then he came up with this gimmick that finally got his foot in the door, but of course, there was no shelf life to Eugene, right?
Yeah. Well, not only was it never something that was going to last, but it still could have lasted longer than it did if they didn't see something that was working and decide to hammer it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's true too. But like I say, I knew, you know, this is not something that you can continue on and on and on. But but there's a guy who externally he seemed to be, you know, okay, that's just the way it is. But he had to have some negative thoughts about it when he was off by himself. He wouldn't be human if he didn't, you know, because I knew I had some, you know, I'd have one of my kids come into my office after training or something and sit down and say, well, you know, what am I going to get up for a dark match? And I say, man, you know, it's not my call. I'm giving you favorable reports. You're here all the time. You're working your ass off. I don't know. And then again, going into talent meetings with Cornette and Dr. Tom and Johnny Ace and, you know, and sitting around a table. And a lot of times, if Corny or Danny or myself would say, they bring up one of our talents and say, what do you think of this guy? I think you could bring him up and give him a shot. You know, I think he's ready for that. Well, how about so-and-so? Well, no, I think he's, you know, we're a few months away from, you know, I think he needs a little more seasoning. Well, guess what? A couple of weeks later, the guy you think needs more seasoning gets called for the dark match, right? And the guy that you thought was ready is still on the launch pad. So, you know, and you got, that's the other thing about our industry, you know. In baseball, if you hit the most home runs, you're going to make a lot of money and you're going to be put in the, you know, the fourth slot on that batting order. You know, that's real. In our business, it's selective, you know. Two bookers can sit down and look at the same guy and come up with two different conclusions. One likes the way he looks and thinks I'll use him this way. Another guy thinks, it's not his look, it's something else, and I'll use him another way. Or I won't use him at all. And there is in the frustration if you are a wrestler that you're stuck with because there's no way to change that. Am I making sense about that? I hope.
Perfect sense. You know what this conversation's got me thinking about is the thing you both you and Cornette have said it. You might have brought it up in the context of Cornette mentioning it to you or somebody where you heard it about Bobby Roode being, you know, a generation too late in terms of what's available to him and what kind of star he could have been. And by the way, our best wishes to Bobby, who was home recovering from spinal fusion surgery, which is no fun. Don't wish that on anybody.
Yeah,
so
really.
We hope he gets better soon.
Yeah. Now, there a quick example, because the last week-long tryout camp that we did at HWA, Dr. Tom and I, Bobby Roode was on that crew. Mm-hmm. AJ Styles was on that crew. Travis Tomko was on that crew. I'm trying to think of the other big guy who played basketball, and then he worked with Corny.
Oh goodness! I know exactly. I can see his face. He not only got a little run in WWE. Went to New Japan. Oh goodness! Now I'm going to be bothered by it for
and
the rest
Impact
of the day.
Impact too. Impact as well.
Matt Morgan.
Yes, those guys are all on that with that bunch, right? That we had that were brought in for us to work with, and AJ was offered a contract out of that. Tomko got a contract. Bobby Roode had to wait. Why? Because it's subjective. Did Bobby get good grades from us? Yes. So again, you know, that's, so yeah, it can hurt you. I mean, emotionally you think, oh my God, I'm better than that guy, or I'm taller than that guy, or I'm in better shape than that guy, or whatever. But then again, it's a subjective business. So, you know, people talk about depression. If you don't have any in the wrestling business, you haven't been in it. That's the best I can tell you.
By the way, just for some of our younger fans who may not be familiar with the story, AJ turned that contract down. So if you're wondering, well, how come AJ Styles wasn't in WWE X amount of years ago? Was he doing an Impact? He actually turned that contract down, did he not?
Yes, he did. I don't know what, I personally do not know what they offered him. I'm going to guess it was somewhere in the neighborhood of between $500 and $750 a week to be in developmental. But he, at the time, had his children and his wife, and he felt that he could do better. And he did.
He was right.
He was, yes. And he still made it to WWE. So
he had his cake and he ate it too. And he didn't miss quality time with his kids. So he won all the way around. But part of the reason I circled around to Bobby Roode is because I'm sitting here thinking about this conversation over the last few minutes. And I'm wondering, would you feel the same way today, the way Jim Cornette talked about Bobby Roode, about Dinsmore and Rob Conway? I mean, if they were in Orlando today, I have to believe Shawn Michaels and Paul Levesque would find a lot more interesting things for both of those guys.
I would think so. I would, sure. Well, because Rob Conway told a young guy that, I won't go into the whole story, but I was at an independent show, and this guy, we were introduced, and he had mentioned that he had worked in NWA with Rob Conway, and I said, oh, yeah. So anyway, I went to the other dressing room for a while, came back, and he's, I called Rob, and I was teasing him. I said, well, if you talk to Rob, tell him. I said to go screw himself, right? and laughed. And, of course, he said, I called Rob and said, Les Thatcher's here and said to tell you to go screw yourself. He said, listen to everything that man tells you. He was the first man ever paid me to wrestle. And Rob, we used him on an HWA show. We had a bar show in Cincinnati, and I think that was his first paid gig. So. Yeah, we go way back. But yeah, it's an emotional roller coaster ride to be in our business. That I don't care how talented you are or how untalented you are, it's still a roller coaster. Your emotions are going to be all over the place before you die. Talk to somebody who knows, man.
That is a fact. And some people, before this month is over, will be on the upside, the top part of that roller coaster with those briefcases in hand. And we'll get a little more clarity on who's going to be involved in those matches at the Money in the Bank show after SmackDown airs as we record this later this evening. But it is about time to start winding down this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, my friend. And I know your summer schedule, outside of being inducted into the Hall of Fame, which is pretty important, is open for bookings this weekend, actually this entire summer.
Yeah. If you'd be interested in booking me, I'd be more than happy to do a one-day seminar or a weekend training camp for your crew or your promotion. You can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. Be more than happy to send you out that information and let you know what I do, what I cost, and what you can expect. And I think I can give you plenty of references if you need them. So give me a shout.
Hey, well, since we've been talking about Dinsmore, Conway, and all sorts of things from back in the day in the territories, and of course, those developmental territories like HWA, you've got that new volume of HWA matches available for folks.
Yeah, actually, volume 3 is out now. You can get 1, 2, or 3, which are all 2 DVD sets, about 6 hours of content. With matches and interviews, Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. Joe does more of the play-by-play, and I do more of the behind-the-scenes stories and so forth. And if you'd be interested, you can pick up any one of those 3 volumes at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And, of course, the Brian Pillman Shows Anthology, the 20th anniversary. It's a 4 DVD set, 15 hours of content is available also. All 4 of the great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, awards, and so many extras, 4 DVD set, as I said. And you can get that at PillmanShows.com or at the 2 addresses I mentioned about the Wrestling from the Heartland, Joe-Dombrowski or Pro Wrestling Library. So check them out. I think you'll enjoy them. And you'll see a lot of guys we just talked about on those shows.
That's true. Hey, while you're busy buying DVDs or getting those matches to be able to download to your computer, get yourself a wrestling t-shirt too, right, Les?
Yeah. And how about the first wrestling t-shirt ever on the market?
That's right.
That would be the Briscoe Booster Tee. Was put out in 1972 by Jack Jerry and myself. And that is available at Pro Wrestling Tees for your wearing enjoyment. I started to say viewing enjoyment, but better to wear it. So, yeah, and he also, if you happen to be a Les Thatcher guy, you can get on a Les Thatcher guy T-shirt as well. And if you're coming to the Hall of Fame in July, Gerald will have we'll have Briscoe Booster T-shirts there, as well as Joe Dombrowski will be on the scene with Wrestling from the Heartland and the Brian Pillman Show's anthology as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and we're going to be talking to some people about that later, you know, as we go along before the July the 20th. And we've got a lot planned. I sent you a copy of the Hall of Fame weekend schedule.
Yes.
But on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, man, there's something going on from daylight to dark and later.
It really is a fantastic schedule. They've done a wonderful job putting this entire weekend together.
Yeah, matches and you know, podcast seminars and autograph, the silent auction, and also, and of course, and obviously this is all in the Hall. You can go to the Dan Gable side of the Hall of Fame or to the pro, or both. I think it's $130 is the all access pass, which includes the awards banquet for all 3 days. So, man, you know, join us if you get the chance in Waterloo, Iowa, July 20, 21, and 22.
When was the last time you said you were in Iowa?
1963. I wrestled in Waterloo. Jim Grabmeier is an Ohio guy. We were starting, getting ready to start in the Kansas City territory, which booked Iowa at that time. And so we started in Waterloo. And I told Toby Peterson, who is part of the committee, the Hall of Fame committee, we talked on the phone, we've never met. And I was telling him, and I remember vividly, because back in 1963, there were blue laws. And we had to get in on Saturday night, because TV was live on Sunday night.
Really?
Yes, it was live on Sunday night. So we checked, and we had all day Sunday to do absolutely nothing. And that's exactly what we had time to do, because blue laws, for those who don't know, blue laws are something were around a lot when I was kids, and then they finally faded out over years. But blue laws, in on Sunday, the only thing could be open a drugstore and churches.
Yes.
Basically, yeah. A grocery store. Yeah. Right. Theaters, nightclubs, anything like that, doors were closed. Now, so we sat.
I was going to say, you say that when I got started in radio and I was down in Georgia, Macon to be exact, we'd have these club nights on the weekends, right? And they'd have to stop. They could stay open, but they'd have to stop selling liquor at midnight.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
After midnight, it was the weirdest thing ever. They could sell up until midnight, and after midnight, it was BYOB. You could bring it in, but they couldn't sell it to you.
Yeah. I know a lot of crazy laws like that, right? I mean, it's, yeah. When I wrestled in Calgary in 62, you realize if you went into a lounge, bar, whatever you want to call it, right? If you were with a wife or a girlfriend, then you were seated with a couple section. If you were a solo, you were seated in the stag section.
You're kidding.
And there was a separate. Oh yeah. And if you were single females, you sat in the couple section.
Oh,
seriously? Yes. You could look over at each other, right? I thought, my God, time clock has turned back.
Oh my goodness, that is funny.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought you were going to say there was a separate section, one for single men, one for single women, but they sat them with the couples.
No. The single women sat with the couples, and the single men had to, we were like, separate. And if you wanted to take a six-pack out of that bar, or a cup, you had to sign something.
What?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. They had blue laws. Their drive-in theaters opened at midnight on Sunday, and the movie started at 12:01.
Really?
Huh. Now, I didn't go to a drive-in movie in Calgary, but I remember reading that and thinking, why the hell would I want to go to a movie at 12:01? a.m. on Monday morning, for Christ.
Now, the real story would be if there was actually a crowd of cars there, say, for a drive-in movie 1201 on Sunday in, like, December. Like, who does your car even start in Calgary in December?
Yes. I've never been there in December and don't want to go. Thank you very much. I wrestled there in the summer, man.
And, hell. Old Stu was asking you to stay. You're like, no, I hear my mama calling me. I got to go. Labor Day weekend, I'm out.
I'll tell you what was fun, because while I was there, I got to go to Stampede. You talk about an event, man. Mm. That was they closed off one of the main streets in downtown Calgary to automobile traffic, and from the center of town, so many blocks in each direction, and people walked the streets. Mm. And yeah, it was crazy. It was a lot of fun.
We're going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly before I get to telling you about how I spent. Speaking of being free to walk the streets, you can walk faster any place in New York City than you can drive. How I spent more than 10 minutes at one light last night, but I won't get into that. For the legend, For the legend, Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for spending some time with us here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And we look forward to talking with you again next week.